Kindles could be hacked using ebooks, the DIA collects location data without a warrant, and an ADT tech was spying on couples. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings, I am Shannon Morris and this is ThreatWire for January 26, 2021. This is your summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. There is a limited time offer happening over on my Patreon page right now. It's in celebration of a couple of new perk levels that I have just published for the first time in years, so I am so excited. Check out all of the new perks and all of the content over on patreon.com/threatwire. I've also got some new goodies in the store, which is over on my website. It's snubsy.com/shop. And now onto the news. Back in the early 2010s, I wanna say, I had hacked a Kindle so that I could play Snake on the screen, or was it Minesweeper? I don't remember. It was silly, but it was hilarious. But nowadays, people are actually hacking Kindles to get access to victims' Kindle accounts and potentially steal money from their saved credit card. Three different vulnerabilities were recently found back in October and reported to Amazon by RealMode Labs security researcher Yogev Baron. They dubbed the attack Kindle Drip, and it could allow an attacker to send malicious ebooks to a device, and using the three vulnerabilities together, they could allow them to run code as root and gain escalated privileges. The researcher found out you can use the Kindle feature, which is called Send to Kindle, which is usually just used to send yourself ebooks onto your Kindle e-reader, to send something malicious to the device instead. So first, an attacker would need to know the Kindle user's email address, which is pretty easy to find out since it's usually just their Amazon email address at kindle.com. That part could be brute forced. Now, Amazon does only allow predefined email addresses to send ebooks to a device, but they were able to spoof these approved addresses. There was no authentication process to ensure an email address was not being spoofed, so this was a very quick hurdle for the researchers to pass. Now, when you send a new ebook to your device, it shows up on your digital bookshelf on your Kindle. So Baron was able to send a malicious ebook as an attachment that would automatically be added to the Kindle device. They were even able to add their own cover image to the attachment so it could work for phishing. Once a victim opens the newly installed book, they would need to click a link within the book, like a link within the table of contents, for example, and this would open an HTML page within a browser, which embeds a malicious JPEG XR file. So Kindles do have firmware libraries, which are called libjpeg XR. So as soon as that image is parsed locally, code also runs locally as root, and it can restart the Kindle. This code causes a buffer overflow, which then could allow the attacker to execute an absolute write primitive, which is a type of attack that would allow them to change where data is actually written to a different address. Now from there, they could then get those escalated privileges. The attacker can then receive private credentials from the device and gain access to the user's account. So if the attacker wanted to, they could publish a fake ebook and log into the victim's account and use the victim's stored credit card information to buy it, thereby collecting money from the user. Now, luckily, the vulnerabilities were fixed in firmware version 5.13.4 on December 10th, but it did work in any firmware version 5.13.2 or below. Now, a user will be sent a verification link if documents are sent from some kind of unrecognized addresses. And the researcher did mention in their write-up that this could have been used to jailbreak the newest Kindle devices as well. I just did a huge update on the ThreatWire Patreon page, as I mentioned previously. There are a couple of new perk levels, some new perks for existing members, and there's also a special offer for a discounted annual membership at a very high discount so you can get 2 months for free. Also, I wanted to shout out all of my patrons for joining the ThreatWire Alliance. Do you like that name? And as always, thank you so much for supporting the show. An unclassified memo sent to Senator Ron Wyden's office as a response to a request for information from Wyden's senior advisor for privacy and cybersecurity, which sounds like an awesome job, has confirmed that the Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA for short, buys location data from brokers collected from citizens' smartphones. This data collection happens whether or not a citizen lives within the United States, and the data is not separated based on this location when purchased. Now, oftentimes, apps or websites collect this information and sell it to third-party data brokers. The data collection is then aggregated into profiles and sent to other parties, like in this instance, government agencies. So according to the memo, the DIA receives data from another agency that they fund. Interesting. The data is global in scope, and it is not segregated to list for US location data versus foreign location data. It's all just included in one big data set whenever they purchase it. Now, DIA processes and separates out the data based on location, and they keep them in separate databases at that time. The memo also mentions that DIA personnel can only query the US location database when authorized to do so and with approval from the Office of General Counsel, the Office of Oversight and Compliance, and the DIA senior leadership. They do state that US location data has been queried 5 times in the past 2.5 years. The memo includes a second question about how the DIA interprets the Supreme Court's Carpenter decision, which with the Fourth Amendment requires agencies to get a warrant before compelling any private company, like a phone carrier, to give them data. They basically say that they don't need a warrant because they aren't invoking law in order to get the data. They are buying it from brokers. It says, and I quote, "We confirm that DIA does not construe the Carpenter decision to require a judicial warrant endorsing purchase or use of commercially available data for intelligence purposes." Huh. But the DIA goes on to explain that the data that they do collect, while not requiring a warrant, is acquired, used, and stored as governed by the DOD Attorney General data handling requirements. It sounds kind of like a loophole in the system. Now, if they buy the data, they don't have to get a warrant. So they are buying the data. Users do have some control over what kind of data is collected via apps on their phones. You can go into your operating system settings, whether you're on iOS or Android, and turn off location data on an app-by-app basis. I want to send out a big shout out to my Hush Puppy Perk Level patrons for sending in their fur babies and for the support, and to all of my Patreon patrons who voted for that DIA story in my weekly poll. Now for this week's story, in the ultimate of creep factor, a former ADT tech named Telus Floro Aviles has pleaded guilty for logging into video feeds of his customers to watch couples, basically doing the Netflix and chill. The Dallas area technician was spying on customers for 5 years, including about 200 accounts, which he viewed more than 9,600 times. Yikes. The defendant was able to gain access by sometimes claiming that he needed to temporarily add himself to their ADT Pulse accounts to do system tests, and ADT fired him after finding out via a complaint from one of their customers. Aviles added his own email address to the customer account in order to log in whenever he wanted to, in order to watch a live feed of their most intimate moments. Ooh. The customer complaint came after one person called ADT to report an unknown address was on their account. Aviles had added himself to their account during a service visit. ADT then reported him to law enforcement and revoked the access to the customer accounts. Currently, ADT does face some class action lawsuits from victims of this digital intrusion, and Aviles himself could face up to 5 years in jail. Connected cameras come with an associated risk. When you assume a reasonable expectation of privacy like you do in your home, adding a live stream of a camera can also introduce a potential for surveillance. Doing reoccurring audits of connected accounts to check for who has access, what email addresses are connected, and updating the passwords following recommended length and creation can be crucial to keeping those conveniences secure as well. Do you want to see some more videos from me, especially about security and privacy? Check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ShannonMorse, for everything from tech reviews to security tutorials. And with that, do not forget to like and subscribe. I'm Shannon Morse, and I will see you on the internet. And yes, my hair is pink.